You're listening to the B2B Growth Show, a podcast dedicated to helping B2B executives achieve explosive growth. Whether you're looking for techniques and strategies or tools and resources, you've come to the right place. I'm Jonathan Green.
And I'm James Carberry.
Let's get into the show.
Welcome back to the B2B Growth Show. We're here today with Anthony Jondrow. He is the CEO of Reputation Economy Advisors. Anthony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, James. Glad to be here.
I'm really excited to chat with you today, Anthony. We're going to be talking about corporate reputation and how that impacts B2B growth. And so before we dive into that, though, I'd love for listeners to know a little bit of context about you and your company. Tell us a little bit about Reputation Economy Advisors.
Thanks, James. And probably quite a few of your listeners might be a bit confused to see reputation and growth in the same sentence. So yep. I'll start by talking about what got me into this topic. And really, the world changed after the financial crisis. That's the biggest thing going on right now. And you don't have to look very far to figure that out. And I call it the dawn of the reputation economy. What I mean by that is that starting in about 2010 or so, people started caring more about the companies and the people behind the products and services they buy than they do about the products and services themselves. So what that means to you, if you're a marketer or if you're a corporate strategist of any kind, is that suddenly how you engage the marketplace is going to need to change quite a bit. The big recognition that you have or that I've seen from companies as they embrace this reality or shrink from it is that they either approach it with a sense of fear, reputation risk, or they approach it with a sense of greed. Wow, this is an opportunity to grow a little bit faster. And that's what I want to talk to you about today.
I love it. And so Anthony, let's dive into that, you know, talking about how the impact of what changed after the financial crisis. You, as we were talking about it offline, you mentioned that there were two specific things that impact B2B growth as it relates to, you know, a corporation's reputation. You said it was risk and greed. Can you talk to us about both of those things?
Well, absolutely. When you think about where this comes from originally, it's grounded in social science. So if you look at the science of reputation, behind it is the science of relationships between people. People don't really have relationships with products, no matter what brand marketers would like to tell you. They have relationships with people and groups of people. So companies are closer to groups of people than products are, and that's really what they are. Companies are a group of people working on the same effort towards a direction that people can relate to. So typically, if you think about traditional consumer packaged goods, the companies behind them have hidden themselves. So reality number one is that's a huge reputation risk. If you're Procter & Gamble, for example, you're the invisible 150-year-old company behind Tide and Crest and product brands that dominate the world. So if suddenly people are curious as to who's the company behind these products they've been buying all along, and oh, by the way, they've seen these new market entrants that are leading with their company or their CSR proposition, and you're Procter & Gamble, that is a major risk, and you don't know what to do about it because suddenly you have to figure out how to tell your story. Now, if on the other hand, so that the second point to yours, if you are a company that has a great story that you've always led with, if you're seventh generation, for example, or Method or something like that in the competing in the laundry aisle against Procter & Gamble, you were born as a company in this new reputation economy, and it's natural for you to talk about who you are as a company and what you stand for. So you're looking for new tools, new ways to tell that story and build on a lead you may already have against Procter & Gamble or at a minimum, chip away at their market share.
Got it. And so how for the B2B companies, you know, for the, you know, a lot of B2B marketers listening to this, I'd love to kind of dive deeper into the greed side of that, into kind of owning, embracing your story and kind of leading with that. What would be the advice that you would give as it relates to that idea, Anthony, to the B2B brands that are tuning in?
What's been great for me as I've had the opportunity to work across a lot of big companies, both B2C and B2B, is that the B2B executives that I've talked to tend to get this. Mm-hmm. This is already the B2B reality. It's not news for you. In fact, if you look at the science underneath it, if you look at B2B customers, they cared more about the companies behind the products they were buying years before consumers did. It was already, when I look at it from a proportion standpoint, if you just take two sets of perceptions of products in B2B and perceptions of the companies behind them and their relative importance when it comes to, say, net promoter score or purchasing behavior. The company set of perceptions, this who we are set of perceptions, in B2B on average accounts for about 80% of those behaviors if you're looking at what explains what. So when you talk to a B2B leader, they get it. They're not, this is not news to them. It doesn't rock their world like it does a strategist at Procter & Gamble. But at the same time, these old disciplines of brand marketing that really said, hey, we need to put a new brand behind every product we launch. Everything has to have a great product story. And when you go talk to your customers, talk up these products and use these new sales materials about the products, B2B salespeople, even though their instincts have told them that they need to tell a broader story, not just about the product, but also about the company, they've been told to talk about the product exclusively for many years now. And retraining them, helping them figure out a new script for how to pitch in the marketplace is a huge opportunity. And it's actually a lot of fun when you get into that.
Got it. And so tell me a little bit more about how you're kind of coming alongside B2B companies, how you and your team are coming alongside B2B companies. So you're helping them kind of craft these scripts and what other things are you guys doing to help them get further along this path of really communicating their story and be less, having less emphasis around the product itself?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story, I think, that might illustrate the answer better than me talking up our services. I was working with a major B2B2C company, really a healthcare device and pharmaceutical company. So their business is B2B salespeople who call on physicians, essentially. They had been, like I just described, talking about the new and latest products that their organization had developed for years. That was what sales looked like. You ran around, you gave samples to the doctors, and you talked about the latest features and benefits of the products. And they were a successful company competing head-to-head with other big successful companies in the world's largest pharmaceutical market here in the United States. I had done some work for the corporate folks, the corporate communications and corporate branding folks in the organization that researched physicians and looked at what they thought about and really analyzed what drove their prescribing behavior. And so this research had been around the organization for actually the better part of a year. So it wasn't like it was new news, but the sales organization looked at it and said, you know, this is contradictory to what all the product marketing people are telling us. And we've got so many new product initiatives. We don't even want to have this insight presented at our sales meeting.
Oh, wow.
So I said to them, well, that's crazy. You know, why wouldn't you want to at least share this? We've got too much on our plate. We can't do it. But of course, what they were looking at was 150 pages of research and really a lot of that said reputation all over it. And I'll give you a secret, James. B2B salespeople don't really care about reputation. That's an abstract concept that's a personal one to them. But when it comes to corporate reputation, they've got bigger fish to fry. So when I got that pushback, I said, hey, listen, this is predictive analytics that we put together for you here that says, you know what, if you talked about the company a little bit when you engage with physicians, they would write more prescriptions in your favor and you would build market share. So the people running this sales meeting said, that's kind of interesting. And it's certainly more interesting than what we saw at this 150 pages of research. So, well, but we don't really believe you. It sounds good, but we don't believe it. And I said, hey, you guys are a science company. Why don't you test it out? Don't change everything you do in your sales meeting. Don't retrain all of your sales reps today. But why don't you go train a few of them in one of your markets and do it just like you would a science experiment? Have a control, do a test, and see what happens. So they did. And at the same time, during the test, which made me a little nervous, their biggest competitor launched a new absolutely amazing product. So they lost market share all over the country, except for one market, the market where they tested the new script that incorporated storytelling about the company. So it's phenomenal when you start to see it in real life. You know, salespeople are show me people. B2B is a show me world. So once we were able to show them actual results, it was off to the races, and they've been destroying their competition ever since.
I love it, Anthony. This has been incredible. Is there anything else before I let you go today that you think would be valuable for our listeners to understand as it relates, you know, to reputation tying back to growth in a B2B context?
I think building on my story there, I think this idea that the world has changed is an uncomfortable one. It's much more comfortable to just go with a tried and true. And there's a lot of fear associated with changing a growth strategy. But if you're in a B2B organization where you have these close relationships with your customers already, you're not two layers away as a consumer product marketer is, then talk to them and do it in a sophisticated way and use a little bit of that analysis that comes out of that to try something new and try it. You can experiment. And that's, I think, the lesson that we can take from that pharmaceutical company is that you can experiment. And I think that can happen really, really fast. So try it out. Prove it in a pilot before you try and change the way you do things as an organization.